Today, Black Friday sales may end in grief. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is post covering finance and property news. Well, Black Friday sales are now back, of course, and at this time of year, we always want to remind people that things are not always what they may seem when it comes to those so-called offers. In fact, Black Friday has been running for a long, long time this month. And of course, a lot of the deals are not that attractive when you actually look at them. Be careful with buying stuff that may not be what it says it is, or perhaps even stuff that is carefully created with less facilities to be able to be differentiated, so-called cheaper, but are not. But there's another important point here as well, and that's what I want to focus on today, and that is the credit impact of the push for consumers to spend, spend, spend. The truth is that the Black Friday sales fall on 28th, of course, of November, and then we have Cyber Monday on Monday, December the 1st this year. And of course, in the US, it falls in line with Thanksgiving. So we've got this so-called BFCM weekend, but actually, well, frankly, it's now a month. And as this ABC article highlights, it's gained more and more popularity in Australia, so that it's become a major pre-Christmas spending spree for local consumers. And it's worth highlighting, in fact, that that has shifted a lot of spending forward into November time, and very importantly, a significant rise in credit use. And credit is something I want to touch on today as part of a broader conversation, because in my surveys, while some households are doing fine and they're using credit sensibly, we are seeing signs of stress elsewhere. So to take the conversation forward, let's look at realestate.com.au's article titled "Black Friday Sales May Cost Shoppers More Than They Bargained For as the RBA Keeps Watch." The first point to make here is that Westpac, for example, in their recent report on consumer sentiment, said the index surged significantly, 12.8%. That's the first positive read since early 2022. Excluding COVID, this was the most positive result in 7 years. A strong gain was recorded despite a less confident outlook for interest rates and jobs, they said. The real surprise, though, is how much those positives outweighed renewed concerns about inflation and the outlook for interest rates. As I discussed yesterday, the truth is that the RBA will probably lift rates next time, not cut them. And generally, consumers, I think, are not necessarily in fine fettle. They do make the point, in fact, in this article, that there is a question, particularly about those with mortgages. As they say, households with mortgages were an exception, with sentiment dipping 0.3% across this subgroup. And they go on to talk about the fact that budget-savvy shoppers are expected to splurge a record $6.8 billion in this year's event, up 4% from last year. That's according to the Australian Retailers Association in partnership with Roy Morgan. So the four-day event from November the 28th to December the 1st gives retailers a boost during the crucial peak shopping period. But the bargain bonanza also offers insights on the health of household finances, with some 6 million Aussies tipped to take part in the annual sales frenzy. It's worth noting, as they do, that in recent years, spending around Black Friday and Cyber Monday has shifted, said the CBA head of Australian Economics, as retailers extend discounting throughout October and November. That's seeing a lot more spending over those 2 months as well. We certainly see that reflected in our household spending data here at CBA, so we would expect to see the same again this year. Actually, last year, retail turnover rose 0.8% in November with the impact of Black Friday, and that was felt rather across the country, according to the ABS. This year, participation among Australian retailers is set to grow, with 44% expected to participate, up 3% from 2024, according to Deloitte. And on average, shoppers will spend around $804 each. Now, the ABC had quite an interesting article on this too, because of course everyone's talking about it, and they highlight the fact that the Black Friday issue put social pressure on shoppers and more Australians could rack up credit card debt. And on that front, it's worth noting that the National Debt Helpline, which of course is the independent service providing financial counselling to indebted Australians, are reporting an increase in callers struggling with buy now, pay later issues. This year, so far, over 7% more buy now, pay later issues have come through than in the previous year. And we still have another 6 weeks to go of reporting, they said. As for traditional credit cards, data from money.com.au showed Australians put an average of $1,200 a month in discretionary spending on their credit cards. That's more than $14,400 a year. And it's interesting to note that not all retailers discount during this trading period, which might catch out some shoppers who may assume everything is discounted. But what we are seeing is more credit cards with more outstanding debt, with millions of Australians tipped to spend a record $6.8 billion over the coming weekend, money will be purchasing on credit. Equifax has shown that outside of the housing market, consumer credit demand rose 18% in the 3 months to September compared to the same period last year. And they reported that credit card applications were up 13.3% over the year to September, while personal loans grew 11.6%. And they went on to highlight that the value of personal credit and charge card balances accruing interest shot up to a four-year high of $18.4 billion in September. That's according to the ABS. That was the highest level since July 2021, when it was at $18.9 billion. Oh, and by the way, data from the Reserve Bank showed that 881,800 credit and charge cash advances from larger Australian card issuers in November last year, that increased 4% to 916,600 by February. Which takes us right then back to the question of what's happening with households. Well, I've just updated the November data, and you can see here that the rental stress, those people with cash flow pressures in the rental sector, is still at 75.3% to the end of November. Compare that with mortgage stress, which eased very slightly, well, 49.5%, so just below the 50% mark, but it's still up from February 2020. That was before COVID, when it was 32.9%. And the debt-to-income ratio was still at 181.4, according to the RBA, so things are not necessarily that flash. Now, we had today the latest financial aggregate data from the Reserve Bank, and they showed that total credit for the month of September to October was up from 0.6 to 0.7%. Housing was the same at 0.6% in both months, whereas personal finance was up 0.5% in September and up 0.2% in October, and business credit was 0.5% in September and 0.8% in October. And the broad money, which is the money flushing around in the system, was 0.8% in September and 0.7% in October. Now, on the year-ended data, you can see, though, that total credit rose to 7.3% for the 12 months to October 25. Housing was up 6.5%, with personal credit up 4.4% and business up 9.3%. And broad money, again, was up well above inflation at 7.1%. Now, one of the ways to look at the credit aggregates which came out today is to look at the trend over time. This is the 12-month credit aggregates, and you can see here 6.5% credit growth ending in October 2025. You can see that the owner-occupied housing growth was 5.9%, and you can see there that the trend is rising, but investor lending at 7.8% over 12 months is rising a lot faster, which of course prompted APRA to come out with some revised guidance, as I discussed. Check out that post. The other credit, so this is personal credit, is at 4.4%, but you can see the trend is quite strong in recent times. Now, one of the interesting debates with this is whether, in fact, this growth in personal credit is because people feel more confident, or is it because they have a need? Now, in my surveys, whilst some people are feeling quite confident and are quite happy to spend, those with rising credit balances tend to be in the camp where they're under significant pressure. So to my mind, the rise in other personal credit growth is more a measure of distress rather than people feeling better about things. And again, on the aggregate data, it's worth noting that the overall credit growth was at 7.3%. Broad money, which is the measure of liquidity in the system, and by the way, when it rises, that's inflationary, was at 7.1%, which is significantly above current inflation, which of course was higher than expected. But what that means is that there is still a significant inflationary pulse in the system. And I want to highlight that for one simple reason. If the Reserve Bank is really wanting to get rate of inflation down, then we've got to see broad money ease back. Now, broad money is based on two things: the amount of treasuries that the government issues, which is rising, of course, and also the amount of lending from the private sector, particularly the banks, both of which are up. So there's more liquidity fluttering around the system, which means that we're going to see a stronger inflationary pulse down the track. That's something that not all economists seem to me to want to recognise, but for me it's a very significant important issue, particularly now. Here's another indicator of what's going on. This is looking at credit card, the balances accruing interest, and the total balances. And you can see there that after coming down through the 2018 to 2021 period, we're now in a period of rising credit balances. And you can see here that the total balances outstanding were $43.5 billion. The balances accruing interest were just over $20.7 billion, and it's rising. And there's a nice little interesting peak up there towards the end. So coming back to the question of credit card debt in particular, this Yahoo Finance article highlighted that the credit card warning is out there. It can be incredibly stressful, as there's a trend to accrue a $3,480 problem, which can quickly snowball. And they make the point, based on research from Finder, that more than 1 in 10 people aren't able to pay off their debts, and this can quickly add up. In fact, this article says millions of Australians aren't prioritising paying off their credit card debt, and it's quickly snowballing into a much bigger problem. With cost of living pressures hitting many people's wallets, some have relied on credit to get them through to the next paycheck. And that's something that I see in my surveys very significantly. There are people reaching for more credit to get through. Now, if it's a short-term blip, it might work. But what it comes to quite often is what I call structural debt. And structural debt is a real burden. So they think there are around 2.2 million credit card holders aren't racing to pay off their debt. This, of course, leads to having to pay far more than you originally borrowed, because the average interest rate on a credit card is, well, extremely high. And there was research back in June that found more than 1 million Aussies had maxed out their available credit and had opened a second credit card, with the average balance per consumer now standing at that $3,480. And then Finder also went on to say that some Aussies are now shifting or also using Buy Now, Pay Later. Now, Buy Now, Pay Later, which of course is a credit product, despite the fact it's not really defined properly as a credit product, is a big deal. And this is something I've been banging on about for some time. Finder said that some offices were shifting to Buy Now, Pay Later services to access faster credit. They found 16% or 3.4 million people had shifted from credit cards and personal loans to Buy Now, Pay Later in the last year. And more than 1 in 4, 27%, still opted for traditional forms of credit, but those avenues can take some time to get approved. which leads us then to a discussion of the Afterpays and other buy now, pay laters. There's a lot of them around, of course. And they go on to make the point that buy now, pay later services are soaring in popularity over credit cards and personal loans as Australians chase quick access to cash. 16% or 3.4 million people have shifted from those traditional forms of credit to buy now, pay later. Now, it's interesting, they said that Gen Z was leading this buy now, pay later revolution, with 22% of the country's youngest workers using services like Afterpay, Klarna and Zip over the forms of credit. Compare that to 18% of millennials, 16% of Gen X, and only 6% of baby boomers. Oh, and they also found that women were more likely to choose this form of credit compared to men. Now, it's worth highlighting that buy now, pay later providers were forced to conduct stricter background checks back in June before giving the money out, along with more oversight and big consequences if you don't stay on top of repayments, because there are big consequences if you don't stay on top of repayments. And that is really the point. The problem with buy now, pay later is whilst you can pay back over a period of time, if you miss a payment, then that triggers two things. One, a significant additional penalty, and two, a potential mark, a negative mark, on your credit record. And that credit record, of course, is becoming ever more important in Australia when it comes to actually being able to transact or even get a mobile phone. So it's a big deal. So this article makes the point that if you've got doubt about your ability to make repayments, you should reconsider using buy now, pay later. The biggest potential impact on your creditworthiness will be your failure to meet your repayment obligations. And yet, according to a recent report, the buy now, pay later payments market in Australia is expected to grow by 12.1% on an annual basis. And that's comparing with growth of 19.8% from 2021 to 2024, according to this recent report that came out in November. They make the point in the report that the Australian buy now, pay later market is undergoing significant transformation as it integrates into diverse retail sectors. There are changes in regulation as well. But looking at partnerships with major retailers, including Afterpay's collaboration with IKEA, highlight the growing importance of buy now, pay later as a competitive tool, they say, to attract younger demographics and to boost sales. And that trend is expected to intensify. For example, companies like Humm have partnered with automotive service providers such as Land or Toyota to offer buy now, pay later options for vehicle servicing. And Afterpay have collaborated with IKEA to provide flexible payment solutions for furniture purchases. So they say that over the next 2 to 4 years, the competitive landscape is expected to witness further consolidation as companies seek economies of scale. Traditional finance institutions such as Commonwealth Bank with its StepPay offering and new fintech entrants are poised to disrupt the space further, driving innovation and expanding buy now, pay later services into non-traditional sectors such as healthcare and education. And meanwhile, the regular landscape has become more stringent, as I mentioned before. So the bottom line in all this is that, sure, we're just about to hit Black Friday and Cyber Monday. We've still got lots of households who are in financial pressure and yet are reaching for more credit. And some of that credit is on credit cards, but some of it now is on buy now, pay later. And unfortunately, what I'm seeing in my surveys is households with multiple credit forms being used as they try to balance their finances. Unfortunately, though, just grabbing more credit is not necessarily a good way out of financial stress and pressure. As I've discussed in previous shows, it's important to build a cash flow, to prioritize, and be careful of those high interest rates. And with buy now, pay later, especially if you miss a payment, then it can be very, very costly. So what do we make of all this? Well, of course, the finance sector, directly and indirectly, are encouraging people to borrow more and borrow ever more. And that's seen in the trends that are coming through at the moment from the Reserve Bank. But more credit is not necessarily the right answer for everybody. And in fact, for those who are under financial pressure, controlling spending and prioritizing more effectively is a much more effective route to future well-being than actually just grabbing more credit. But of course, the industry and retailers are wanting to make sure that you spend, spend, spend. And of course, the government wants you to spend, spend, spend. And, well, unfortunately, the buck stops, though, with individuals and their spending decisions. And my general observation in Australia is that while some people are pretty sophisticated in what they do, there are many others who are getting caught with penalty fees, penalty interest rates, and getting into more difficulty. I remind you of what the people from the debt helpline said. The bottom line here is just be careful and cautious and control your finances and don't get caught up with the Cyber Monday or the Black Friday spin, 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 especially when many of those deals are not that great in the first place. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.